Welcome back to another episode of the Talk Show podcast. Now, this week, I was delighted to chat to legendary Welshman Peredur ap Gwynedd. And for those that don't know who Peredur is, he is probably best known as the guitarist from the drum and bass band Pendulum. So that, dun, 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 that riff, that's him. Now, we first met about 6 years ago when I briefly worked for a company that designed silent, wearable subwoofers. And people normally look very confused when I say those three words together, but it kind of made sense at the time. Anyway, we ended up chatting for an hour longer than we'd originally planned when we first connected, and that was about another shared passion, cycling. And that leads us to this podcast, even though this podcast isn't really about music, gadgets, or cycling per se. But the fact that Peredur goes off every year to cover the Tour de France, the world's biggest bike race, for Welsh language TV channel S4C. I wanted to dig into how that unique opportunity came about, and more importantly, whether there is a greater significance than simply being a novel way to cover the Tour, which, after all, is already available on Eurosport and ITV in English. Now, most people probably don't know the fact the Welsh language is even alive, and dare I say it growing, is a miracle. Years of oppression by the country's neighbours England, who, let's be honest, have a bit of a reputation for being oppressy, meant that the language was pushed back and whole generations were taught that speaking Welsh was not only unnecessary, but depraved. That said, there's a Welsh proverb, Cenedl heb iaith, Cenedl heb galon, which means a nation without a language is a nation without a heart. And many in Wales have stuck true to this and fought to keep the language, its traditions, and by extension, the country itself alive. So perhaps talking about cycling in your native language is not novel at all, but a revolutionary act. Let's chat to Peredur and see what he thinks. Shemai, a cloiso, Peredur. Sut oedd ti?
Iawn, diolch yn fawr. Sut oedd ti, Rhys?
Yeah, of nawdwe.
Da iawn.
Na, benigedig, diolch.
Great.
That's my bit of Welsh out of the way. I had to throw it in there when I got you here.
Absolutely. I know you've been learning anyway, so...
I was
kind of expecting it.
I don't get to speak much Welsh, though, learning in Berlin, so...
In Berlin? You don't speak Welsh in Berlin? What's wrong with you? Don't speak... how much Almaeneg do you speak compared to Cymraeg?
At the moment, I speak much more Cymraeg, to be honest.
Cool.
But it's mainly Saesneg, so... Okay. But my wife, she's Cornish, So we have done some stuff where we've been learning Cornish together, and I Brilliant. Often just talk to her in Welsh, and then she just sort of gets fed up with me and says, just tell me in English. So
cool.
trying to bring her along on my journey steadily.
I am.
So yeah, it's a long journey for me learning Welsh, but I'm only properly a year into it, but I'm sort cool. of determined. So I learn some Welsh every single day.
Amazing. That's great.
But you're obviously a native Welsh speaker.
I am.
Grew up in Wales. And that's what the main crux of this podcast is about.
Okay, cool.
But I was interested to know, like, whereabouts did you kind of grow up and speak in Welsh? Like, did your parents speak Welsh? Like, was it all around you? Was it your main language? Because that's not obviously the case for everyone who grows up in Wales.
Yeah, I was born in Pontypool, so Pontypool is a town near England, and the area is back then wasn't particularly Welsh speaking area, but both my parents spoke Welsh, so Welsh was a language at home, and so we always spoke Welsh. So, but then we moved further west. We moved to near Carmarthen, then near Swansea, then eventually moved to Pembrokeshire. So I spent 5 years in Pembrokeshire from I was 13 to 18. And when I was 18, I moved to London. And I'm still here and I'm still speaking Welsh. And I've got a five-year-old boy and I speak Welsh to him as well.
Ah, lovely. And like, was your schooling always in Welsh, or was it, like, what was it like back then? Because obviously it's changed a bit in recent years.
Yeah, although it wasn't... My primary school wasn't a tradition. Well, it wasn't a Welsh bilingual school, but just everybody spoke Welsh there anyway. So most of the kids spoke Welsh. It was just a Welsh area. And then my secondary school, for the first 2 years, I was in a place called Ystlyfera. And that was a Welsh bilingual school, so everybody spoke Welsh there. But then I moved to Pembrokeshire and I went to, lived in a place called Crummich. And the school there, Ysgol y Preseli, wasn't officially a bilingual Welsh school, but everybody spoke Welsh. So it might as well have been a Welsh school anyway. But it is now, but officially, but back then it wasn't. So,
And did you think about it when you were younger about the Welsh language being kind of tied to Welsh identity? Maybe in maybe your attitude changed that a little bit now, but did that ever come across to you, the importance of speaking Welsh?
Because we did it naturally, not really, but we went to Eisteddfod. Eisteddfod is a mm-hmm. big cultural festival in Wales. As a young person's version, which is called the Urdd Eisteddfod, and then the National Eisteddfod in August is for everybody. So it's to go to both of those. So that's when you kind of understand the whole Welsh identity is by going to the Eisteddfod. And we used to go every year, we used to go caravanning. And I suppose that's when you... when you meet other people from other parts of the country, that's when the identity kind of clicks. It's not just all about rugby or whatever, It's, meeting other people from different parts of the country and then talking about it. Because nobody really talks about it on the street. But when you go to a Welsh thing, like the Eisteddfod, then everybody talks about it.
Did you ever perform there yourself?
I did, yeah, many times. Mainly in rock bands.
Yeah?
So, yeah, they have various competitions and stuff there. And we used to enter the rock band competition a couple of times when I was a kid. And then used to do gigs there anyway. There's gigs every single night in different venues. So, yeah, it's more of a social thing for us rather than the cultural thing as well, because we used to have a right old laugh there.
How do you feel about the, it's controversy in inverted commas, around kind of letting people perform who maybe also have English in their song lyrics, for example?
I thought that they should be allowed, and then having thought about it, no, they shouldn't be allowed. If they want to do it in Welsh, fair enough. But, it's, the Welsh culture and language, it's still fighting. It's only 500,000 of us speak the language, and it's still fighting. And to dilute a festival, a cultural festival like the Eisteddfod, with any language, any other language, like be it French, be it German, be it English, whatever, will dilute the Welsh. And as long as you do it in Welsh, there, it's the whole point of the damn thing. The
yeah,
is to be in Welsh. I mean, you can have gigs on the periphery and do it in English. So you can set up a gig in the town in that week, but on the Eisteddfod field, or as they say, the mice at Eisteddfod, it's only Welsh, and that's how it should stay. But they do have gigs on the periphery, and you can do whatever you want there. But I've changed my mind on this. But I thought that yes, English should be allowed, but now I've gone totally the other way. Mm-hmm. A total 180, they shouldn't be, because who knows within 10 years how that's going to manage itself, how much English do you...
Where do you draw the line?
How much any other language do you allow in a Welsh cultural festival? Remember, culture is the main thing about the Eisteddfod. And in 10 years' time, is it 20% English? 30%? Do they get to do the poetry competitions in English as well? Although my cousin Kerry, he's what you call a privardd. He's a bard. He's one of the main bards in Wales, and he's won the main competitions. And there was a big hoo-ha one year when he won it, because he writes in Canghanedd, which is a kind of a a fixed meter alliteration type of thing. That's the best way to describe it in English. But and it's very, very strict. You know, it, consonants and vowels have to appear in certain places, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Think of iambic pentameter and then some. So, and his poem is a long, long, long poem, and it's all in Welsh apart from one line. He was describing an altercation in a chip shop in Cardigan, from where he's from, and the line that he used was "fuck off, you Welsh twat," which is perfect Cynghanedd. And you know, the big hoo-ha, the fact that he used an English sentence in this poem,
yeah,
but, you know, it kind of worked in context.
Yeah. No, I mean, definitely. It's the thing is, it's easier. I think you have less controversy by just saying no English.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, as you say, if it's 10%, 20%, then you'd be having arguments about, oh no, there was five words too many in English or something, and it just gets.
It's best just to do it in Welsh. It's a Welsh cultural festival. You know, that's where it should be.
So you were saying you left Wales when you were 18.
Yeah.
Like why was it that you wanted to get out of Wales? Was it just change of scenery? You felt it was too small for you?
Oh no, I went to uni. So I went to university, and the best course for me was in London. Because it had a recording studio and an electronic music department in it. So I went to Goldsmiths, which is quite a progressive the arts college in the University of London, and it's the most progressive of a lot of them. You know, Damon Hirst went there before me. I was just like, the whole art thing is quite bonkers there. And the reason I chose that, because John Cale went there. Cale is from a place called Garnant, which is 3 miles down the road from where I used to live, and we all heard about John Cale, you know, and the Velvet Underground, and the fact that he went there, I went, okay, I want to go there as well. So that's why I chose it, because another Welsh bloke left Wales and went to London to look at the bright lights or wherever. But it had an amazing music department, and that's why I went there.
Yeah, I studied fine art, so Goldsmiths was always like the sort of shining example. Like, its reputation sort of preceded it, and you. Well,
the fine art department, of course, was just seriously off the chain. It's just amazing. Yeah. The names that have come out of there, you know, it's the best. Well, one of the best places. That and St. Martin's, I think,
the
best places to do it. You know, not in only the UK, maybe the world. So we had a lot of foreign students come in just to do fine art and music as well. So it's very well renowned.
But you didn't go back to Wales. So is it you just fell in love with London, or because there's so much industry based here, so many musicians?
Well, yeah, because you've got to be in it to win it. Mm-hmm. And London is one of the main centres on the planet for music. You know, you've got LA, you've got Nashville, you've got New York, London, Berlin itself, and Munich. You know, and Paris, and London is one of them. And you might as well be in London. And to do what I do, I don't think I could live in the countryside in anywhere in the world, apart from I have to live in the city, basically, because all the work happens. Rehearsals, they happen about 10K up the road from me. and I have studios up there as well. So it's like, it's really close. If I lived in Powys, it'd be a massive pain in the ass for me to get rehearsals every day, wouldn't it? So yeah, but it's been like that because obviously with all the concentration of people here, you're more likely to work with somebody that's successful than you do if you're out living somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a no-brainer really to stay in London, because as soon as even when I was in London in uni, I was getting jobs. Just for the fact I was in London and could play guitar, I was still getting jobs, you know. And then once I left uni, I was still getting jobs in London.
Mm-hmm.
And there was more work here. So that's why I stayed, basically.
Yeah. If you're in Wales, I mean, if you need to get the train anywhere in Wales, you have to normally go through England anyway. So.
Yes, you do. Oh my God, trains are bloody awful there. It's really bad.
I mean, yeah, I've just been trying to plan some trips. Because I'm going up to Llanberis next year.
Yeah.
And just...
It's, God.
It's a nightmare.
I wouldn't even... Euston Station to Bangor. Bangor, then... You're on your own after Bangor, mate. I think it's a taxi, or you've got to wait a day for a bus.
I mean, I'm going there to do a run, so I might just...
Oh, you could run there.
I might just run there. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Are you doing the Wyddfa marathon or something?
No, it's the probably similar, but it's UTMB Snowdonia.
Ah, right, okay.
Their words, not mine. But
of course.
I every now and then I write something and say, like, you're going to change the name now, you know?
Yeah.
that's like a 55. I'm doing the little one, so I'm doing 55-kilometer.
Ouch.
Race around the mountain. So
nutter.
The full length one is a 100 miles.
Jeez.
So 160k, which is just the Germans do this thing where they to say like crazy, they put their hand in front of their face like this. that's what I'm thinking. Like, yeah, I think 55 is my upper limit on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But traveling around, bit of a nightmare. Yeah. So yeah, obviously you have this amazing career in music. It's obviously what you studied, of course, but most people now probably I'd say know you as the guitarist of Pendulum. How do you go from that to covering the Tour de France in Welsh for S4C?
Well, I've always been a cycling fan, and since Twitter started, so I used to put some of my rides up on Twitter, and this was pre-Instagram, and so that in between, this is before I got married, so in between tours I'd bugger off somewhere like in somewhere alpine with my bike for weeks. So end of one tour, I've got a friend of mine who's got an apartment in the old town in Nice. Mm. And he let me use it whenever I wanted, whenever it was free. And so, you know, I used to pick up the keys off of him, jump on the plane from Heathrow to Nice, and, you know, hour and 10 minutes. It's quicker to go to Nice than it is to go to Cardiff.
Sad truth.
Yeah. So I used to go to Nice for weeks on end, you know, and just do all the calls around there. And then... I remember during the Olympics, I didn't want to be in London during the Olympics, you know, just because I was being contrary. So I went to Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne for 2 weeks. So while everybody was in London celebrating the Olympics, I was on the top of my... I was doing Galibier, I was doing bloody Quarterfair, Glandon, Madeleine. I think I did Galibier 5 times that trip, yeah. And you know, did the whole Marmot thing as well. And yeah, so it was, so I did that. And then about 2010, I think it was 2010, mate of mine, Alex Murray, who works for the BBC, he's a blogger, cycling blogger. And a guy called Manuel Quinziato, who was cycling for Liquid Gas back then, was at the tour, cycling at the tour, and he just put on Twitter saying, "I'm listening to on the massage table after a stage, obviously, listening to Rage Against the Machine. Does anybody have any other suggestions of good music?" And my mate Alex replied to him, said, "Oh, my mate Perry he's in a band called Pendulum. You might like their music." So Manuel started following me, then I started following Manuel, and then. He came to one of our gigs a couple of months later in Innsbruck, which isn't too far from where he used to live in Bolzano, which is only a couple of hours drive. And so he came to the gig, then he invited me on a training camp in Calpe. So I went, because I like cycling and I cover distances, but I'm not very fast. It's like, so I went, all right. And so I was, yeah, obviously daunted, you know, riding with pros for the first time. And, you know, that's when my eyes were seriously opened, you know, how fast these guys were.
Mm.
These, oh, my, it, you know, I thought, oh, this is easy going on the flat, you know, in the bunch, you know, they'd have like 30, 40 riders all going out on a training ride, and I'd be in the middle of them. You know, do 32, 34 kilometers an hour, piece of piss, isn't it? It's really easy until they go uphill. So as soon as they went uphill, they carry on the same speed, obviously. And I just drop back. It's like, oh, I remember the first time that happened. It's like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. So on that trip, I was riding with Bonin, I was riding with Chavanel. God, is all these amazing riders, you know. And who else? Oh God, so many people. It was Daniel Oss, it was Jacopo Guarnieri was with us. Frederick Willems, who's in our group as well, is Ivan Santaramita. You know, and a lot of these guys then that year moved to BMC.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got pretty chummy with the guys from BMC and Cadell and all that lot. So it's that's how it all started. Back to the Tour de France. Original question: how did that happen? So I kept on putting these photos of these trips mm-hmm. on Twitter, and then a mate of mine, Emir, who works for a production company in Wales, he phoned me in 2014 and said, "You like cycling, don't you?" I went, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, we're putting together a pitch to try and get the Tour de France on Welsh TV on S4C, S4C, the Welsh language channel." And I went, okay. Because I've done TV since I was a kid. So if you grow up speaking Welsh in Wales, everybody does a bit of TV. So,
right.
Yeah, it's like being the Sugar Babes, you know. Everybody gets a turn. So I've done quite a bit of telly over the years. But I've never done any sport. And it's all to do with music or stuff to do with music or culture or whatever. So do you fancy being like a co-presenter, commentator? I went, yeah, all right. So he phoned me 6 weeks later and he said, "Do you remember that conversation that we had?" I went, yeah. Well, we got it. What are you doing in July? He said, "Well, actually, I'm on tour." So I was on tour at the time. So, but luckily, we were on location for the first 3 days mm-hmm. in Yorkshire and London, and for the final day in Paris. So I could do the first 3 days on location in front of the camera and the final day. And then I used to jump in and out with commentary then throughout the 3 weeks as I was on tour. So I was jumping off tour, going into commentary booth, off back on tour, back into the commentary booth, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. So that's how it happened. And this year we just finished our 10th Tour de France. Yeah,
amazing.
We've done 5 Giri as well. So 5th Giro this year. And I still pinch myself because, you know, they still allow me to do this. You know, I think because we're getting a lot better at it as well because people do like our broadcast and we do come from a background of knowing a lot about cycling. Now, I'm a total cycling nerd. My brother does it as well. So he's a massive cycling nerd, and everybody who's involved in the broadcast is a nerd. And we've got some pros as well. We had Scott Davis, he was in Bahrain and Dimension Data. He's with us. We've got Elinette King, who is with, she's a professional as well. There's quite a few pros now working with us as well in the Welsh language, which is quite fantastic. And so it's cool, really.
Yeah.
I'm so bloody lucky to do what I get to do. You know?
I'm always very jealous when I see you going up, shooting off to cover the tour. And I'm like,
the weird thing about it is now we're part of the wallpaper. We've been there for 10 years. And we know all these people, you know, some of these people I'm talking to, them are bloody heroes. And I'm going, all right, Alberto, how are you doing? Fine, thank you. And, you know, that type of thing. And it's nuts. It's utterly nuts.
Mm.
You know, it's like, you know, being on first name terms with the heroes is just crazy. This year, I met Tohu Shubd for the first time, which is great because he's totally one of my heroes. Yeah. And after the 2009 Tour de France, I thought, I bow down to him. You know, what an amazing, amazing ride that he did that year. So when he won the green jersey. Yeah, legend.
Yeah, I do miss... I've never been and like covered the Tour for even a week. Normally, like in my job when I worked at Canyon, I'd get to go for a rest day or something.
Yeah.
And then you do get to ride with the pros. And the good thing about that is that they don't go as hard up the climb. So yeah. Probably.
Oh, no. If I was in there, I'd be like out the back.
Well, I was with a bunch of journalists. Everybody was taking it very easy. Yeah. So, So I think I definitely haven't had that full experience. Where's the, where do you do the commentary from when you're not, on location, I guess? Oh,
we do it remotely in Llanelli, which is in West Wales. If you look at the map, in South Wales, you've got Swansea, and then Llanelli's about 30K west of Swansea, nearly in Pembrokeshire.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember once I was cycling around Richmond Park, and I bumped into Sean Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's only then I found out that they weren't always on the tours many years ago. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You were just sat in like a box somewhere.
Yeah.
And just like illusion shattered. Yeah. Although now...
Actually, they were until a few years ago for the Tour de France. They were there on location commentating. But since COVID, they've been in... Well, Rob Hatch does it from Spain, from where he lives in Mallorca. And they've got various studios. They've got studios in Bath. They've got studios in Chiswick. So at one point, there might be three different commentators from three different studios. So, yeah, that's how they do it now.
And now a bunch of them are in the... They're not commentating. Well, some of them are, but like they're in that big...
The box.
They're in that virtual roof.
It's a studio called The Box. That's in Windsor. So, yeah. So there's a commentary studio there as well. So, but ITV, so Ned Bolting and Dave Miller and Happy Kenyuk and all those guys, they're actually on location as well with us. So, they're out in France.
Oh yeah, I used to enjoy Matt Stevens going up all the climbs on his Brompton. Is he still doing that? He probably is, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, the gearing on the Brompton, that just goes to show how strong Matt is. Matt is a very, very, still now, is his engine. He's got a huge engine, So he's and doing those climbs, those HC climbs on a Brompton with town gearing is one hell of a feat.
I've done some rides of him on Zwift, and no chance.
He's a beast.
He's
a beast. He's one of the most talented riders out there. Because he was a pro until he was in early 40s. So,
the long arm of the law.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
One thing I was always interested about is you don't see that many Welsh flags out on the tour. You see more than I think you used to.
Yeah.
But you do see there's never a shortage of the Gwen Hedy, the flag of Brittany. Do you ever try and talk to any of these people in Welsh, or are they interested? I know there's obviously a lot of similarities, a lot of words are identical, and then the rest of it's completely different.
I have done in the past, not on the tour, because on the tour we're stuck in the zone technique, which is like the TV compound.
Yeah.
So we don't really go out to you can go out, but it's because you're working, you kind of stay in the zone technique. But so you don't get a chance to speak to many of the cycling fans. Yeah, but there's loads of Gwen Ortiz. There's the most flags that you see is Brittany, Norway, Denmark, Basque.
A lot of Basque.
Still a lot of Welsh. There was no Welsh people at all in the tour this year, but there's still a lot of Dreigochs there, the Welsh dragons. which is yeah, Wales. Even though there's nobody there still supporting the country, which is hilarious. No, but when Geraint's riding, you know, there's loads of Welsh flags. In the Giro this year, there was shitloads of Welsh flags.
Yeah.
Tons of them. And yeah, so yeah, they're the main flags that you see. You know, basically all kind of small nations, really.
Yeah.
Or nations within bigger countries. You know.
Yeah, who have...
All want to separate. Mostly,
and struggling to keep their languages
exactly,
alive.
Yeah. Although Basque Country this year, first stage was in Bilbao, second was in San Sebastian, and didn't hear any Spanish at all whatsoever. Not one word of Spanish. That's all you hear is Basque. I'd never actually been to the Basque Country before, and I was like astonished. It's like they're all speaking Basque. Yeah, you know, I can pick up some Spanish. You know, when I hear Spanish spoken, I know it's Spanish. You know, I've been to Spain so many times. But I got to Bilbao and I was like, no idea what they're talking about. This is amazing. This is utterly amazing. We learned a little bit as well. You know, instead of saying gracias or gracias, we would say eskerrik asko. That's thank you in Basque. So, yeah, saying eskerrik asko the whole bloody time was great. Yeah, but didn't hear any Spanish. The only Spanish I heard was going back, flying out of Bilbao after we drove from Bayonne, from Biarritz, back to Bilbao. And the only Spanish I heard was in the airport, but with Spanish people speaking the language, not the Basques. And people behind the till speaking Spanish back to them. Yeah, that's the only Spanish I heard the whole time I was there.
Nice.
Wild, really.
That is pretty wild.
Yeah.
You've been doing the tour for, as you say, 10 years. How do people, I guess, sort of react to you? Especially because I imagine, especially in continental Europe, or France mainly, yeah. I know there's other countries like Basque Country. How do people react to Welsh? Because I imagine that most people don't know that Welsh even exists.
Well, as I said,
or didn't until you got there.
Well, now they do. It's and as I said we're part of the wallpaper. We're part of the wallpaper. We're there speaking Welsh, and it's normal. It's totally normal. You know, the ASO who run the Tour de France. If anybody doesn't know, they're the company that owns it, and all the people there, they know us, and you know, we're first name terms, and know that we speak Welsh. We don't do it in English, we do it in Welsh. And they really look after us because we're such a small country. They kind of give us the best spots. It's like, oh, come here, you can go there. And especially when Geraint won as well, you know, the whole Welsh identity in France during those 3 weeks was seriously nuts. I walked... On the final stage in Paris, I walked up the Champs-Élysées, actually on, because we've got the passes, we can go wherever we want, basically. So we can actually walk on the track, obviously, not when the race is on. So I walked up to the Arc de Triomphe and then back down again. And the amount of Welsh flags there was like, it's just insane. It's the amount of Welsh people there. And after the podium, we got interviews with a load of Welsh fans, obviously, and we got Geraint's dad did his interview in Welsh. We got Dave Brailsford, who did his interview in Welsh, you know, because he comes from, well, he's born in Derby, but then spent most of his childhood.
I've seen him on TV speaking Welsh. Yeah,
he spent most of his childhood up in North Wales, so he counts himself as Welsh, you know. So he speaks perfect Welsh. So we had him interviewed in Welsh. You know, we had an extra half. No, we were on air for an extra hour. They extended the program because it was just so Welsh-centric. It was amazing. Some of the best days of my life. It was so wild.
Can imagine. But it must have been very weird to watch Geraint on the top step and then have God Save the Queen.
Well, I knew it was going to be God Save the Queen because it's a British cycling license. So it's like that they go with that, you know. You know, Chris Froome was at the top spot of the podium four times, and they didn't play the Kenyan national anthem, though, did they? Yeah, it's all to do with what license you've got. So,
I mean, I remember hearing that Dave Brailsford had tried to.
We had tried to as well.
Yeah,
yeah, but that was the reasoning behind it, because even though he's got the Welsh Dragon on his bike and on the Ineos, back then on the Sky team bus, you've got a list of all the riders and their respective countries, flag of respective countries. So you've got Belgium, Norway, blah, 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 France, blah, 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 blah. And then Geraint and Luke have both got the Welsh flag, not the Union Jack. So and they realised that, but there's nothing they could have done about it. But we had a word with at the Giro this year. You know, Geraint came second, is very, very close to winning it, and
yeah,
we did have a word with the authorities to say, if he does win, can you get the Welsh national anthem, not the British one? And they said yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we were that close, you know. Yeah, 14 seconds away from my Heimrod van Aerdyne in Rome. Yeah,
I was very excited about Geraint possibly winning that.
I had to interview him, so it was on the last on the penultimate stage, that horrible time trial up that horrible 15% average mountain. Monte Lasari, isn't it? Yeah. And I had to interview him afterwards. So they had to take him to doping control first, and we had to wait for him. And it's honestly one of the hardest things I ever had to do. You know, he doesn't want to speak to anybody. And I'm like, going, oh my God, it's just, what do you say to him? You know, it's like, you know, you just had the Giro snatched from underneath him. And, but you've got to keep professional about the whole thing. And, yeah. Yeah, so it's you know, I'm glad I spoke to him, because, you know, that's a little bit of history there, isn't it?
Yeah, he always seems, he's always very sort of level-headed, I think.
He's a bloody nice bloke, you know, that's where he is. He's a bloody nice bloke.
Yeah.
And he likes a laugh, you know. He always tries to make fun. If you're interviewing him, he tries to make a little bit of a laugh as well. So it's he's just such a nice guy. Because Sarah, his wife, she worked with us on the tour in the first 2 years as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a connection there between our program and him. So, because he's been our poster boy for 10 years. So, there is a connection there as well.
Do you ever think about... whilst there's obviously the fun of covering the tour, it's something which you're really passionate about because of the cycling. Do you ever think about the other side, the sort of the impact of providing
the environmental impact?
No. More of the impact of in Wales, by doing something like that and covering it in Welsh and providing it in Welsh.
Yeah, there's sort of big impact. You know, now there's a massive or a bigger Welsh audience because we do it in the Welsh language, and we turn so many more people on to the sport of cycling. And the fact that Geraint won the damn thing, it's like that's got a lot to do with it. The sport's kind of exploded, you know, and we've got a load of really, really talented youths coming through as well. There's, you know, Josh Tarling, he's just absolutely ridiculous. 19 years old, and to do what he does, you know. And his brother Finn, apparently he's 17 and he's just as good, apparently. So, and I know that he's moving on to a bigger team next year, a development team. So it's it's going to be good. Yeah, the future's bright with Welsh cycling at the minute.
Do you have any kind of contact with Welsh cycling? Like, do you have an idea of if there's like more cyclists kind of coming into
The pro that we work with, that works with us and has done for the 10 years, is a guy called Griff Lewis. Griff was a domestic pro, cycled with Ribble, with with Sun God, with Pedal Heaven, UK Youth, all these continental British teams. He knows, he's been doing it for riding on that level for about 13, 14 years. So he's seen an increase, even though the British scene at the minute is kind of dying a death. There's still talent coming through in Wales. I'm sure there's talent coming through in other parts of the UK as well. But yeah, he sees it because he's there. He's there on a coalface, and he trains a lot of these kids, you know, and he sees a lot of talent coming through.
Mm. That's definitely good to hear. Thinking about, obviously, amazing, the whole tour covered in Welsh, like so many more things are being added or covered, especially I think about, like, there's more dramas coming out in Welsh.
The whole Ryan Reynolds, his channel in the States. And on Wednesdays, he's got Welsh Wednesdays, and there's six hours of Welsh language programming.
Which is mental.
It's amazing. It's utterly amazing. I mean, when I saw that, I nearly fell off my chair. I was laughing so much. But it's utterly ridiculous. Yeah. What a bloke.
I mean, yeah, he's just taken Wrexham right to the States.
Yeah, I'm a Cardiff City fan, right? And I've always, since I can remember, I've been a Cardiff City fan. And over the last season, I've been checking the Wrexham scores first. Yeah, because obviously they're having a better season than Cardiff were. You know, Cardiff stayed in the Championship, thankfully, but you know. Yeah, when you're riding a crest of a wave like Wrexham, you know, you have to support them, really.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I watched the show on Disney.
Yeah.
My wife, neither of us like football, really.
Yeah.
And we both totally got into it. Yeah. And it's hard to imagine there being anything else which could have such an impact. I know it's, you know, is really focused on football, and also that, you know, they do talk about and do seem to put a lot of emphasis on building the community, less about Welsh language, although they have done so much for that as well.
I mean, Rob McElhenney, he's learning Welsh. I met him. I did a TV show that Esperarec recorded it in November in New York, and so there's a bunch of Welsh talent singing on stage, and they asked me to be in the house band, and there was a pretty good band, you know. Keyboard player from Jamiroquai was in there, there's a bunch of other guys there. And so this was a thing financed by Esperarec, the Welsh government, and the Welsh FA. So just to give Rob and Ryan an award. And thanking them basically for what they've done for the world, for Wales, which is what they've done is huge.
Yeah.
It's absolutely huge what they've done for the country. So they gave them basically this award, and they did a speech. And I met Rob McElhenney afterwards, and I went, "Rob, diolch yn fawr." And he just turned back to me and he went, "Diolch yn fawr iawn." Perfect, perfect accent. I was like, my God. So, yeah. So that's quite cool. Yeah, but Maxine, who the Welsh journalist who's actually in the program itself, you know, I spoke to her a few times about them and asked them, "Are they for real?" I said, "Yep, they're definitely for real. There's no bullshitting with this at all, with what they're doing."
Yeah.
It's for real.
It feels like, it definitely feels so genuine.
I mean, if I was doing this and I didn't give a shit, I wouldn't bother learning Welsh, which is so difficult to learn, you know. But it's like, you know, he's actually learning it. And, you know, just to do that, you know, he doesn't have to do that, but he does. It's amazing.
That, the teaser video they did, where she was basically saying stuff and then telling them that she was saying something completely different.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Was absolutely amazing.
It's a stroke of genius. That was comedy genius. That was very, very funny. And yeah, and there was one of the episodes as well where most of it was in Welsh as well, and everything that, if they have a technical term in English, they translate it into Welsh and then into American, which is very good.
I mean, the Welsh government, they have this plan by 2050 to have 1 million Welsh speakers.
Yeah.
I think they set that around like 2017, around about that time. So it's been 6 years, which would be about 30% of the population of Wales.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound very good, although 30% is about the same as Gaelic speakers in Ireland. So yeah. At this rate, maybe that's going to be reached by having more Americans speaking Welsh than...
But no, there's a big... you can see that a lot more younger people are learning Welsh now in Wales because it's cool. It's a cool thing to do, and you know, with all the football, you know, the international success with the football as well, and the Welsh identity, the Welsh FA, the football team, you know, put across with the team, it's just, you know, the World Cup campaign was amazing.
Yeah,
the Welsh language, probably that, and the Welcome to Wrexham program, well, arguably has got more positive effect of the Welsh language than anything else ever, well, over the last century anyway. It's like, because all of a sudden Wales is cool and Welsh is cool, and there's, you know, especially with the World Cup campaign, you know, it's Welsh everywhere. And Ian Gwyn Hughes, who runs that part of I think he does the PR for the Welsh FA, that's all his idea, and my god, what a good idea that was. And another, I think WRU are gonna try and emulate that, you know, because
are they?
Yeah, that's what I've heard anyway. So
I feel very pessimistic when it comes to anything to do with the WRU, to be honest.
Well, you're wearing the hat.
Well, I'm not.
No, it's not Ichdino, he's got the proper one on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's by a guy, Independent Tropical Wales.
Yeah.
Makes some great stuff.
They made a lot of money over the World Cup, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. but this one's beautiful. I have a t-shirt as well. Yeah,
just to explain to the Ichavi means yuck in Welsh. And the fleur-de-lis on all the Welsh rugby. It's the Prince of Wales
feathers,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And it says Ichdin, I serve. Ichdin, I serve underneath.
In German. Which it also says on Wrexham's
Yes, it does. But Rhys has got one that says Uchavi, yuck, which I prefer.
I loved it so much. When I saw it, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna order a bunch of stuff. and I've ended up buying more stuff, but it's all stuck in the UK at the moment.
In customs.
Pretty much at my mum's. It's easier to get it shipped to my mum's and then pick it up when I go visit than get it stuck in customs, thanks to Brexit.
Yep.
I also saw the football association. Anyway, they're going to start using. They use Cymru. That's their Twitter handle.
Yeah.
And they're also going to start using that as the name.
Yeah.
For all of the matches, I think. I'm not sure when they said that would be. Was that from next year or the 2025? But that's also, it's a small thing, but it's also an absolutely massive thing.
Well, internationally, it's huge, isn't it? Because people don't look at at Wales as Wales is, it's from the German, isn't it? What does it mean? You must know this.
Yes. It means
visitor, isn't it? Something like that.
No, I mean it's the old Germanic word, which I think is something like Welsh. That sort of means foreigner.
That's
slash French speaker. So
bonjour. Ça va.
So that's also Wallonia. It's called Wallonia because that's the French speaking part of Belgium. It's
Yeah.
It's called that for the same reasons.
And the Gauls as well, isn't it?
It's yeah. So, and in German, they still have the word Welsh,
yeah,
which means sort of a French speaker. And then they have a word Kauderwelsch, which means to speak gibberish. So I'm very like, when I started looking into this more, I was like, well, we really should stop using these terms because I know everybody's used to it.
Yeah.
But when you dig into it, you go like, actually, it's just really fucking weird.
Yeah, yeah, it is a bit.
Like the roots for it. Yeah. So,
I mean, once football starts using it, then rugby are going to follow suit, I'd imagine, because they would look ridiculous if they didn't.
And I don't think they're worried about that.
Oh no, there's a bit of there's been quite a lot of hoo-ha against the WRU just recently. Oh, so
absolutely.
And I think they're feeling the pinch a bit, you know, because they realise that, oh dear, something's happening here. We've got to change how this thing's set.
True, but they have arguably messed up rugby in Wales for quite a while now.
Yeah, they have.
So I feel like rebranding is probably not top of their agenda. But there's a petition in nation.cymru to have the logo changed to a dragon.
Yeah.
Which would make sense. By the way, the dragon on the Welsh football kit is beautiful. Like the rebranding on they did it. Like, I'm very much into graphic design.
It does look the wrong way though. That's the only problem with it. It looks to the east, where the red dragon always looks to the west. That's the one problem I've got with it.
But didn't it always? They didn't change the direction of it.
Don't know. With the Welsh flag, the dragon always.
Yes.
The orientation, it looks west. So it's that's the only problem I've got with it, because it's looking the wrong way.
I hope that they do. I very much hope that they do change it. They did get rid of the Ichdin, which was one small improvement, but it is still the Prince of Wales feathers. I really do hope that they do change it, because it is these seemingly small things which have a big impact.
That would be a massive impact, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Getting rid of the feathers, then William, does he get invited along? Is he still the, whatever they call him, the patron, whatever, you know?
Well, he's also the patron of the English Football Association, so a bit of conflict. They would argue no conflict at all, but it's just a little bit. Who is going to be the first, I guess, president or prime minister of Wales?
Michael Sheen.
That's the easy answer.
Yeah, I know it is.
I mean, I would say exactly the same.
He'd be brilliant though.
He'd be brilliant, but he might be. Would he just be acting? He's already played Tony Blair.
He could do it as Tony Blair or Brian Clough. Actually, I wanted to do it as Cloughy.
And there's a lot of people in Wales who are very wedded to voting for Labour, so maybe they would actually go for it if it was Tony Blair.
We'll have to see about that. But no, but I think Michael Sheen is, he's obviously a bit of a legend. Like, I met him years and years ago. We were on this TV show together. God, and even back then, before he became massive star, he's such a nice guy, lovely, lovely bloke.
Do you think a independent Wales will happen in your lifetime?
I hope so. It kind of, the whole Yes Cymru thing, when that started, was it 2020? And I was like, there's some momentum here. This is, something's going to happen. But then they all went to shit. It's like, oh my God, what happened to you? Oh my God, what are these tweets you're putting out? It's just like, what? I mean,
everybody
was so enthused by the whole thing. And then they something happened within Yes Cymru. I've been trying to find out who took over and when and what. And who messed the whole thing up? Because, I really want to have a word with those people. Because the fervour, the momentum, the whole Welsh pride thing around that time was the peak it's ever been. And then somebody in Yes Cymru screwed the bloody thing up, totally fucked it up, you know. And now they started putting out tweets. Praising Lloyd George. It's like, you know, yeah, Lloyd George is Welsh, but he wasn't a particularly brilliant Welshman. You know, it's like, and this yeah, very, very
I didn't see any of the tweets. I only saw the aftermath.
Oh God.
And then I'm also a member of Yes Cymru. So
I was. And then after the Lloyd George one, I wrote to them and said, please stop taking my subs.
I mean, I didn't know. And then there's this, they get these emails, say there's sort of a red wedding.
Yeah.
And everyone's being sort of removed and going to start again.
Yeah.
But that being said, the latest polls anyway in Wales around feelings, emotions around independence are still very high, especially if you look to younger people under 18s.
But it would have been a lot higher if whoever in Yes Cymru hadn't have screwed up so badly, you know. It went up, then it went down, and then it's kind of going back up again, you know. You know, we were riding the crest of a wave for a minute there, and then it all went to shit.
Yeah.
Because of some arsehole in fucking Yes Cymru, you know.
How do you tie this to... The thing is, we have this kind of... There's definitely a positive trajectory with regards to feelings in Wales around Welsh independence.
Yeah.
And you have a Welsh independence party in Plaid Cymru who have struggled, admittedly. Yeah. It's been even worse now with the thing with Adam Price and him having to leave. I don't really know the details of it, but he seemed like a great leader, but he just, whatever reason, he wasn't getting the cut through.
Yeah.
You have campaigns like Come Die First who, okay, it's... They've been relatively small and kind of been more led by students over the years. So there's the things which already sort of exist, but they haven't really been able to kind of grow and develop. And it's weird that it's most of the kind of progress which has been happening has been coming from things like football teams.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. The Welsh Football Fans for Independence. You know, I've always said that independence isn't going to come from... I'm a member of Plaid Cymru. And I've been so, and I've always said Welsh independence isn't going to come from Plaid Cymru. It's going to come from the Red Wall, because Plaid Cymru. Fair enough. Yeah, I've been a member. I am a member, but it's not going to come from that. It's going to come from Labour supporters wanting to be independent, you know, and non-Welsh speaking Welsh people. That's the important section, Plaid Cymru, the vast majority of Plaid Cymru people are Welsh speakers. The English speakers within it are going all the time. It's good luck. But the Welsh independence isn't going to come from Plaid Cymru. It has to come from the rest of the country, you know, from the Red Wall and Welsh fans for football fans for independence, those guys. That's where it comes from. And until that happens, then we won't have it. But there seems to be this fervour within Welsh football fans anyway, you know, which is it's quite exciting to see. It's still going on. They have these marches every time Wales play in Cardiff, and it starts in Womanby Street and outside Club Ifor Vach. And it's very exciting to watch because that's where it's going to come from.
I mean, I was in Cardiff last year, the day where there was a big Yes Cymru. Well, actually, it wasn't just Yes Cymru. There's multiple different groups marching there for independence. And it was, I was there because I was running the Cardiff Half Marathon. It was the most amazing vibe in the city centre. Yeah. Like, I've been there on like rugby match days, I don't know how many times, which is always an amazing atmosphere, but there was something different, especially just people like just sort of shouting and high-fiving each other. And then in the evening we went and saw Gweno play, which was made it even better, I think.
Yeah.
So there's definitely an energy there. One thing which I think, I'm also a member of Plaid Cymru, yeah. Which I'm also a member of the Liberal Democrats.
You're not supposed to be a member of two parties, apparently.
But my argument is I can't vote. I can't vote for Plaid Cymru. Yeah. I'm a member because I'm...
You know what? I've never voted for Plaid Cymru. Because in Camberwell and Peckham, with the constituency that I live in, they've never stood a... There's never been a...
I know.
Plaid Cymru candidate.
They could do if they wanted.
Yeah. But, I've never voted for Plaid Cymru because I can't.
Yeah. So... But what's interesting is I feel like in the next election, the Liberal Democrats, I believe, can be the kingmakers. And
if they decide that independence is a good thing.
Well, no. So I'm going a little bit roundabout, right? So
because they're a bit wishy-washy, aren't they, Rhys?
Yeah, they're liberals, you know.
They don't.
Well, not as bad as Labour, to be fair, on that front. But it's been a big eye opener for me to be sort of involved because I also work with the Liberal Democrats.
Right.
So to see inside a political party and
their PR, you're very good at PR. You should bloody work on their PR side of things because those stunts that they do are bloody dreadful. Oh my God!
What are you saying when it shoots out that little bit of confetti?
Fucking hell. What the fuck are they doing? I mean, surely somebody...
Whoever's making those models is making some good cash.
Can you imagine the idiot who thinks that crap up? Or we're going to have a cannon, right? And then there's going to be confetti. We're shooting into the future or whatever. And then the damn thing doesn't even work.
I think it did work. It was just pathetic.
Yeah. But the Lib Dems... Yes.
Listen, I always have a big beef because I'm not a unionist, and obviously the Liberal Democrats' position is, I quite often I've tweeted, Liberal Democrats in Wales and been like, are you still unionist, by the way? Because the Green Party aren't unionists.
So they're
probably like as a UK party goes, probably the Greens are the closest aligned.
Yes,
but I switched to Liberal.
Vote for.
Yeah, I switched to Liberal Democrats around the time of Brexit because I thought, they'll have the most chance of stopping it.
Yeah.
And now I feel like they have the biggest chance of going into a coalition with Labour, and their big thing is electoral reform. So,
UK definitely needs PR.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah. And so then I start to think, well, then when you start to think about like proportional representation, maybe a bit further, a bit of federalism here and there. Right. Then you start to think about, well, then people can actually vote for who they want to vote for, including myself. Like, nobody I've voted for has ever won. Yeah. So no vote in the UK has ever counted in that sense. Uh-huh. As where in Germany, you have two votes.
Yeah.
So I know that actually, I mean, last time I voted in Germany, I won everything. So it was like the complete opposite.
It's like the lottery.
Really? Yeah. So it felt completely different. So in that sense, I feel like, maybe then people's attitudes also start to change. You know, you're not just going to be voting for Labour because you've always voted for Labour, or because you live in the South in the Labour heartlands. And maybe then it might not be Plaid Cymru, but there'll be other parties that could come out and they'll be pro-independence and like not mental.
Glad.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. Jesus. Yeah.
They probably don't get name dropped very often. So that's the biggest bit of PR they're going to get on this podcast. Yeah.
Glad, and I'm laughing at them.
Yeah. That's the best they could hope for.
Yeah, exactly. But with Wales, I know that a lot of the Labour members in the Senedd, surely they know, the way that the Senedd is run. And with the meagre crumbs that they get from Westminster, it'll be a little bit better under a Labour government, but who knows, 5 years after that, there might not be a Labour government, and there'd be another Conservative government, be even worse than this one. So, I'm sure that a lot of the Labour politicians understand this, and, but they can't really talk out about it that much, are they? So because it's not policy yet, you know.
Do you think that someone from S4C could maybe speak to their BBC counterparts and tell them that it's not the Senedd?
Oh, yeah.
I'm very surprised. I mean, because there's been this big sort of outrage, obviously, about the renaming, in inverted commas, of place names in Wales. Uh-huh. And obviously Rishi Sunak came out as well to say, I'm going to still use the English name. But funnily enough, after the war in Ukraine, they very quickly stopped calling it Kiev.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a big hypocrisy there. But it's one of those small things where it really grates me. Why don't they just call it the Senef? It's not that difficult.
No, it's just really, really, really easy. Double D, it sounds like a soft TH, like in with. W-I-T-H, it's a Senef. It's easy. It's fucking easy. You know, it's just
very easy.
God. It's not the sound that nobody ever uses. You know, it leaves it quite a few times every day. You know?
But why do you think there is that sort of hypocrisy? You know, everyone went from Kiev to Kiev, you know, and it was seen as like that, just by saying that name differently, it's somehow supporting.
Well, you show solidarity with that country.
Exactly.
Right? They're not showing solidarity with Wales. You know, that's obviously what they're doing. You know, and not even bothering to learn. You know, it's just that. That's it.
Is it? Do you think just it's that sort of historical sort of establishment entitlement?
Because I've lived all my adult life in England. I love England. England's bloody brilliant. I married an English woman. You know, my son's half English. You know, I love England. England's bloody great. But it's not English people. It's, as you say, the establishment and people who, you know, who are in power and who've got within the media. I've got a certain amount of power because they're in the media, and they don't even bother to fucking learn it. You know, just learn the odd things. You know, because speaking and living within an English community, well, it's more of an international community here in London, but you know, still the English people that I speak to, you know, they're not like that at all. You know, people say about a Sais, the Englishman. It's not that. It's certain section of the establishment of the media, whatever you want to call it, really.
Do you think it would be better if more people in England learn that their kind of native language was Welsh?
Yeah. I mean, in education.
Obviously, the parent language, like the Brythonic.
Yes. That should get taught more in schools because, you know, I have to tell, because it's not that people who live here in England are ignorant. They've never been taught it, you know. They've never been taught. So I tell them, blah, 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 blah. This is where that comes from. And this comes from blah, 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 blah. And they went, oh, really? Yeah. Because if they've never been taught it, you know, it's not their fault really, isn't it?
True. I mean, it's the same sort of thing around slavery. You're not taught about that. You go basically as a child, pyramids, World War II. maybe there's, I mean, yeah, you get a bit of like Henry VIII thrown in. But otherwise, there's a large bit of history, which kind of went conveniently around the time of Empire, just sort of gets missed out. And then we're like, hey, look how cool we were.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you've got to go, so I just sort of had one sort of question which I wanted to leave you on, which maybe you probably can't answer, but I'll force you to.
I'll try my best.
When is Pendulum going to come out with a Welsh language song?
Oh God! At the moment, never. Although Rob, the singer. Whenever we play Wales, he does speak a bit of Welsh as well. So we played the arena up in Llandudno, and I had to teach him how to say Llandudno, because you know, obviously it's Llandudno. Yeah. So he said, "Llan did not. Let me hear your motherfucking scream." But he does speak a few words of Welsh, you know, whenever we speak in play in Wales, and I get to speak as well in Welsh. I used to play for Natalie Imbruglia back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and myself and my brother played for Nat, and we've taught her a few bits of Welsh. So, and she did a gig in Cardigan, in Cardigan Castle. They have a lot of festivals on throughout the summer. She did a gig a couple of weeks ago, and I taught a little bit more Welsh. She's introducing the songs in Welsh. Aganes a yw, blah 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 blah. You know, the next song is and stuff like that, and saying diolch yn fawr Abertawe instead of thank you very much Cardigan. So
very nice.
Yeah, very proud of her. Yeah,
she's although in Abertawe there's probably a lot most of the people probably English.
I know it's a big.
No, I know. I'm joking.
it's very close to Pembroke. Well, it's right next door to Pembrokeshire, so it's right on the border.
So, okay. Yeah. I mean, just because I think about, you know, Gwenno, what an amazing job she's done. Yeah. Maybe more for Cornish,
yeah.
But it's all related. But for absolutely. Welsh, absolutely sort of incredible in recent years. Yeah. So I'm like, well, maybe you never know. Pendulum might use their their platform.
Yeah.
I also want to see. I don't know if you've ever seen it. There's a drama called Ygwych.
Ygwych, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And
is that the hinterland, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. So all the people in that are my mates.
Oh yeah.
Oh, when it was on, I was watching it with my wife, and it's like, oh, so and so. There's Richard Harrington. He's a very old friend of mine, the main guy. And then in the first or the second series, the bad guy is an actor called Rodri Evan, and he's my best mate from school.
Oh wow!
I played in loads of bands with him. The first ever band I was in, he was the drummer. Yeah, and he was also Gwynfor Evans in the latest biopic thing that soon that just came out as well. He's Gwynfor Evans in that. So all these people, I bloody know anyway, because Wales is very very small, especially.
Yeah. Well, then you need to try and convince them to make another season.
Yes.
And yeah. it should be on Netflix.
Absolutely. I think. Yeah.
It's also one of those things where I'm like, this would be an amazing advert for Wales. So, yeah, all right. Well, I'll leave you with the idea of a Welsh Pendulum song.
Okay.
Maybe you would choose to forget, but.
Wait, actually, Rob from Pendulum said, while we were on the way to the gig in London, I said, do you know what the Welsh word for pendulum is? And I went, actually, no, I don't. He went, it's pendil. I had no idea. So he taught me some Welsh.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Pendle doesn't quite sound as good.
No, it doesn't sound as good, does it?
Yeah. No. It sounds like the German.
Yeah.
Pendeln, which is to commute.
Right.
So not as cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and
no
having a chat with me. It was fantastic.
Diolch yn fawr iawn.
Yeah, diolch yn fawr.
Diolch, Rhys.